Hey, Fed Heads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is episode 40. Episode 40. I haven't had enough beer yet to stumble over my words. Fire cured hops. If the name kind of throws you, it's because we're doing some Kentucky Fire cured cigar pairing and muots with IPAs today. And I've got a special co-host today because Rob is away. Aaron from Blind Man's Puff.
Aaron, how you doing, guys? Not much. Doing well. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Well, thanks for coming on. So we were talking offline, and I couldn't remember what show you were on, and you were on the Cider Show, which wasn't all the best pairings, as it turned out in the end.
Yeah. I think your cigar didn't work out as well as the one I picked, but mine wasn't too bad, I didn't think. I enjoyed it.
Now, we were talking offline. You said that IPAs typically don't rank as one of your favorite cigars.
Yeah, I'm sure all the hopheads out there will hate me for that. But yeah, IPA is probably my least favorite. It's the bitterness that I don't care for. And it just depends, I guess, on which IPA I get. You know, the more bitter it is, the probably least likely I'm going to like it.
Well, I mean, you know, I can see that because it is a very, very strong beer. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of bitterness to it. You can get IPAs that are balanced where they're more of a citrusy quality rather than a green piney quality. But you know, most hop heads really want that punch in the mouth of hops. And right. So, you know, I think that's kind of where the market gravitates towards.
Yeah. And I almost liken it to the some of the cigar trends in which there's just a lot of power and strength in some of the newer ones. And that's what people are looking for. And that's not really my wheelhouse either. So I'm looking for more of a balanced type of cigar. So it's a strength and flavor combination.
And I would agree. I mean, you know, every once in a while, sure, I'll take a really full-bodied cigar and I, you know, triple IPA or whatever Imperial IPA that blasts my face off with hops is fine. But at the end of the day, I think you're right. I think I don't know if this is just us or seasoned smokers, but, you know, balance is nice. Nuance is nice. You know, anyone can just throw a bunch of hops into a batch. Well, maybe not anyone, but, you know. Let's get some other flavors going on there. Make a good beer.
Yep.
So I am smoking the Piggy. It is one of the few feral pigs that I have. I'm lighting it kind of late because I don't know what the smoking time on this bad boy is going to be. I don't smoke a lot of pigs. It's a 4 1/8 inch. There's a measurement for you by 60 ring gauge. So it's beefy, but it's short. What are you? You're also smoking a Muwop, but a slightly larger one.
Yeah, I don't know the exact specs on it. I'm going to guess it's 5 5.5 by 54 or something like that. I'm not sure what the exact size is. I was looking it up to see if I could find that out. But yeah, you definitely have the shorter of the two.
Now, the interesting thing about the KFC, or at least interesting to me, is my first cigar safari down to Nicaragua was in 2013, which was around the time where they're just starting to release KFCs, or at least sort of test blends. And I was on a group that actually got to test and enjoy the KFCs and do some rolling with the tobacco. And I think what was interesting behind the production of the cigars, of course, they went, I think it was about 2 years where they sort of experimented with how they're going to blend it, because the fire curing process makes the filler quite incombustible. So it was quite a challenge.
Yeah, I heard they were playing around trying to get the fire cured tobacco to actually be the wrapper as well. And I think that didn't work out too well for the burning characteristics of it.
No, I think they've explained the process multiple times to me, but just however that smoke gets infused into the leaf, obviously just makes it very incombustible. So it has to be a filler. One of the things I'll just mention off this Piggy, because I've had Muwats before. I think I've had the Molly and the Chunky. And this is by far the most fire-cured cigar that I've had to date. Like this thing, when I was mentioning offline, it was like sticking my nose into like a pit of a pig covered in mesquite. Like it's just so overwhelmingly KFC. And right off the start, I'm getting like tons of spice and pepper. which is to me a lot more than what I was used to on the other KFC Vitolas that I smoked. Mm-hmm. And of course, mine's gone out.
It's trouble lighting the small heads on some of these cigars. That, you know, you think you got them lit, and you don't want to over toast it, but then you don't get to actually catch it on fire.
Yeah, and I find the piggies in general. I mean, I really like the Vitola. I think it's a cool collector's thing, but sometimes I find them a little tough to initially light, just because you got that almost Figurado shape where it's closed, and then going into this enormous 60 ring gauge body. So, at any rate, she's a spicy one.
Yeah, this is actually the Fat Molly that I'm smoking.
Okay, so I've smoked the Fat Molly. I enjoyed it, but I mean the KFCs were a very divisive cigar, and I think throughout the review people and throughout the industry and throughout customers, it seemed like that was one of those cigars where you say you either loved it or you hated it, and there was sort of no in between opinions that I could see.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's definitely the fullest strength and the fullest type of flavor that you get from, I think, any of the fire-cured cigars that are out there.
Now, what's interesting to me is that now that I've got this lit, there's still quite a bit of spice and pepper off of it, but I'm also getting a ton of sweetness, and I'm thinking that's the wrapper, because I think and I'm not sure if it's the Molly also uses a San Andreas wrapper, but I know the feral pig uses a San Andreas wrapper, and the wrapper is almost competing hand in hand against the fire cured tobacco, which I find quite surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one isn't that sweet for me. I'm getting mostly the smoky characteristic and that kind of barbecue type flavor from it.
Well, I would say that, I mean, obviously I'm like not even an eighth of an inch in, but I actually really like this so far. I mean, it's way too early to make a call on the entire cigar, but just off the start, I'm enjoying this a lot more than the Molly or the Chunky that I smoked. And I think just because maybe the wrapper's got more of an influence against the filler. But why don't we... I didn't even mention the filler that I keep talking about is Brazil Matafina, Nicaraguan, I don't know, it's probably Jalapa or Condega, and then, of course, the U.S. fire-cured tobacco, which is the primary component, and as we mentioned earlier, very, very difficult to combust, so they had to play quite a way with it to figure out exactly how many leaves they could fit in to still impart that fire-cured taste, but still allow it to combust. So first up, of course, we are drinking IPAs, and I'm drinking a local IPA here. This is from a Calgary brewery. The reason I picked them is, A, I really like their IPA, but also pretty much this is one of those breweries where they don't put out anything that I don't like, and that's unusual for me to find. Like, there's always one beer within a lineup at least that I go, meh, you know, it's not for me. So this is the Village Maiden. It is India Session Ale. It's 4.6% ABV. They describe it as having a floral citrus hops, a high bitterness. It's unfiltered. I don't have any of the nerdy beer details, so the IBUs or the original gravity. All I know is that I enjoy this beer. And while you talk about your beer, I'm going to have some sips and some puffs.
Sure. I'm starting out with the Ballast Point Grapefruit Sculpin. So Ballast Point's out of San Diego. Lots of their beers are, you know, critically acclaimed, winning awards and things like that. This is a 7% alcohol by volume. It's actually pretty nice. The grapefruit flavor is definitely noticeable. And for somebody, for me, that doesn't like the bitterness, kind of having that citrus flavor along with it does kind of cut down on that with some of that acidity. So it's kind of a good way to balance out those bitter flavors with the citrus.
Yeah, and I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, as you say, balance is the key. And there are quite a few breweries out there now that are doing a mixed blend IPA with a fruit offset. And I think specifically for the crowd out there that are not a fan of the big 80 plus IBU IPAs and want something, you know, less bitter. I meant to talk about Village Brewery because, like I said, I love them. They're based out of Calgary. They were founded in 2011. If you follow me on Untappd, you'll see that I'm constantly drinking their beer. It's just kind of, like I said, one of those beers that I always have in my rotation. It's delicious. The reason, just so that people are aware, they're like, because I saw a lot of comments, and they're like, why are you pairing a KFC with IPA, right? And it's a legitimate question. Like, you know, why do we pair anything? And I think the first answer to that question is because it's my show and I can do whatever the heck I want. Number one. And number two, and the real reason is back on Sharing Our Pairings episode 22, we did the Smoking Monk IPA series. We did the whole five show run on the Smoking Monk. So that was episode 22, and we were expecting the IPA to be the worst of all of the pairings because, you know, why would you pair an IPA with a cigar? It's, you mean, you're talking about something very citrusy, very bright. That's, in my mind, the wrong flavor to pair with a beer.
Right.
And, you know, in the end, what we actually found was the IPA ended up being pretty much the best pairing, or at least best being subjective, of course, but our most favored pairing of the entire series. And Rob and I at the time were, you know, talking about, and I should clarify, so there's a lot of discussion about the Smoking Monks and how they're constructed, because there's a lot of details left out about what the filler was, etc. And one of the comments we made about the cigar is that it seemed like it had fire-cured tobacco in it, because, you know, if you've ever smelled a cigar with fire-cured tobacco, it's kind of unmistakable. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to think it's something else.
Yeah, it's definitely pungent. I mean, it's got that unique aroma that you're not going to find in the, you know, in other cigars that don't have that kind of an addition to the tobacco.
So we weren't obviously able to clarify whether it did have fire-cured tobacco in it or not, but it seemed to. And just based on the nose and based on, you know, the smoking it. So out of that show, we said, you know, what we really need to do is revisit this with an actual KFC or something that's fire cured. And so that's kind of where this show was born.
Yeah, I definitely think this is probably the best fire cured cigar to do the pairing with, because I don't think the other ones that have it would necessarily be able to stand up to the IPAs.
Yeah, I think that's the inherent problem of an IPA. As you talk about it again, it is so bright. I don't, like, if I sat down and went through an entire catalog of cigars, I don't know what else I would try to pair with it, because it's just such an unusual flavor combination. And I mean, really, at the end of the day, I think you're talking contrasting all the way. There's just no way to complement an IPA.
Yeah, you just need something with a fair amount of strength to it to kind of see if you can cut through that. Because for me, IPAs tend to have a really long finish. And with that bitterness, you kind of need something that if you're going to transition straight from having a drink to taking a draw off a cigar, you want something that you can cut into it with and not have to take three or four draws off the cigar to kind of start getting the flavor of the cigar and to get around the flavor from that's left over from the beer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've probably talked about this on other shows in the past where I'm not actually a huge fan of cigars that have a long finish either, like cigars that have a really heavy leathery finish. And, you know, I would say the same is true of IPAs. I really like IPAs, but there is something to be said about an IPA that just finishes without, you know, tasting hops for the next 5 minutes before you take another sip.
Exactly.
So I would say the description of the Village Maiden is pretty much exactly the way they described it. Floral citrus hops. This is very floral. It is not the most hoppy beer that I've ever had. In fact, I would say if I had to guess at the IBUs, this is probably sitting around the 60 mark. I mean, it's got that almost grapefruit hoppiness to it, which I actually like sort of a more sour IPA, citrusy, rather than a really, really overwhelming sweet IPA. The nice thing about this one is it doesn't have a really, really long finish. So for me so far, it is actually an interesting contrast because I think if I were smoking the Chunky or smoking the Fat Molly, I'm not sure that these two would go together. But because the wrapper in my mind here is offsetting, I'm getting this sort of combination of the fire-cured tobacco, and then I'm immediately getting just this vanilla sweetness from the San Andreas wrapper, and then it's finishing spicy. So it's kind of a flavor medley, and I'm digging it.
Yeah, with the grapefruit sculpin, I get the grapefruit right up front, and then it finishes with the kind of the bitter hops after that, but then you take a draw on a cigar, and the cigar cuts right through it. So the beer on its own has a very long finish for me. But the cigar does cut through it really quickly so that you get that cigar flavor right away and you don't have to worry about, that too much of a mixture. But it's, they're very contrasting flavors. So I wouldn't say it's a great mix, but they are very different so that you can taste them both and you're not kind of muddying the waters in between the two of them.
Yeah, I don't think, I guess in my mind, I'm not too ever worried about a cigar running over the flavor profile of an IPA. I think you're right. If you're not a fan of the way that an IPA finishes, this might be a good alternative to pair because, as you say, if you don't like that long, bitter finish, just have a draw of a cigar and it'll cut that out. And certainly for me, like I said, the San Andreas wrapper just adds that nice sweetness. Now, what's interesting is I'm starting to get a little bit of earthiness from this. So the initial sort of quarter inch was really good. I'm not sure how that earthiness is going to play off with the IPA, so I might have to go through my lineup and then come back to the village to check it again and see if it still stands up.
Yeah, I think as that ring gauge kind of opens up, you're getting more of that filler now, and that wrapper's having less of an effect for you. So it's kind of where you're losing the sweetness maybe and getting that earthiness that's picking up.
Yeah, and I do find that, a lot of times the feral pigs do have, because there is so much filler in a 60 ring gauge cigar, especially with Nicaraguan tobacco, I do find it a little bit on the sort of leathery, earthy side. And I find that especially in the feral pig vitola that, I tend to find them quite earthy. So I would say so far, I'm kind of not bad, but I'm curious to see how the other two beers really stack up. How are you feeling after your first pairing?
Yeah, like I said, the first pairing kind of like just two separate things kind of being paired together. I wouldn't call it a great pairing. I do like the beer. It's the first time I've tried it. And I would say it's probably one of the better IPAs I've had since I'm not a big fan of IPAs. I think definitely the grapefruit and the citrus is a big help to balance that out for me.
Just a reminder to our audience, whether you're listening live or through a podcast or on the Armed Forces Radio Network, you are listening to or watching Sharing Our Pairings, episode 40, Kentucky Fired Hops. A reminder to everyone out there that we've still got a few days left in the Oktoberfest. Quesada Cigars has got an Oktoberfest giveaway going with a special beer stein, which I hope to get my grubby hands on and will probably fail, as well as some limited edition boxes of Oktoberfest. And of course, that's going to run until October 4th, which is the official end of Oktoberfest. So you still got a few days to get into that. We are running the contest daily, so make sure to check that out. Again, thanks very much for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners for tuning in. Appreciate what you guys are doing out there. So just a kudos to Ballast Point because the grapefruit that you're drinking, I've had a couple of their beers and I actually really enjoy them. I think they're really, really balanced. For me, it's kind of a new introduction. I hadn't tried Ballast Point until a couple months ago and big fan. But for my second beer, I'm going with a bit of an odd one here. and I'm not quite sure how this is going to pair. I'm going with an Innocent Gun. And yes, Innocent Gun does make an IPA. Innocent Gun makes a lot of different things. But this is kind of everything in the kitchen sink because this is an oak-aged IPA. So toasted oak like you'd get out of a bourbon or out of a whiskey. And then they put the beer in there and they get some of that oak flavor into the beer, which is kind of a curious thing, but that's kind of become their shtick. This bad boy is 5.6% ABV. So, you know, again, at least for my first two beers, I'm well below the mark. I think you said you started out at 7%.
Yep.
So I think I finished at 7%, but I figured I'd start out light and then just get incoherent by the end. It's kind of my plan. So Innocent Gun, of course, located in Edinburgh, Scotland. Being of Scottish descent, I'm a huge fan of whiskey and scotch and, of course, a huge fan of Innocent Gun. And I'm really looking forward to trying this out because I've drank this quite a few times, and it's a very different flavor profile, especially with that oak. You know, you're getting a little bit more of a sweet IPA rather than a really bitter IPA. So while you talk about your second beer, I'm going to take a couple sips.
Sure. So my second beer is the Dogfish Head 90-Minute Imperial IPA. And they're out of Delaware. And I think they've got a pretty good following. And I think with the various IPs that they have, there's a big following amongst homebrewers in regard to trying to mimic the brew there. So this is a 9%. And I've had this beer actually before. And it's also another one of the IPs that I do tend to like. It's got a very short finish. It's not super bitter. It's really balanced. So it's a pretty easy drinking IPA. And John, I'm not sure if this is something that you might have any information on. Is what's the difference between an Imperial IPA versus a standard IPA? You know, what's the different component into how something would get deemed as an Imperial IPA?
So usually when they throw Imperial, it's just a buzzword, and really Imperial is just meant to stand for strong. So if you say Imperial IPA, presumably it should have a really high ABV, and you know traditionally they throw some extra hops in there just to give a really pungent taste. Imperial is usually, I think, usually if you see a beer Imperial, it's going to be an Imperial Stout, which means, you know, it's in the high 9.5, even 10%+. I think I missed it because I was taking a sip of my cigar or taking a sip of my beer and kind of wigged out. What was the ABV on that bad boy?
It's 9%. Hmm. So would Imperial be synonymous with like a double IPA, or is there a different terminology for that? Is it one more hops for a double?
You know, it's funny because we've kind of encountered this over the various beer shows we've done. There's a lot of terminology that's used, and it's used in a way that isn't very clear. So like words like double, triple, really they're meant to be a replacement for strong, but you know, it's a marketing thing. Strong doesn't sound as cool as saying, you know, this is a double IPA or triple IPA. So there is no, how do I say, there's no fast and hard rule that a double IPA has to be a certain number. Like maybe it has six hops instead of three, and it has to meet 7.2% ABV or higher. It's really just a buzzword to sort of draw people to buying the product.
Gotcha.
But I think, you know, when we talk about Imperial, absolutely Imperial, you know, and again, it's not hard and fast, but if I see Imperial on something, I know that I'm buying a beer that's going to have probably 8.5% plus ABV. And that seems to be applied to any style of beer, whether it's a IPA stout or whatever. Okay. So the Innocent Gun, I'm not sure if there's a lot of Innocent Gun lovers out there, but I love Innocent Gun, being the whiskey slut. I think I can say that on AFRN. The whiskey aficionado that I am, I really appreciate the oak influence on a beverage. Like oak, you know, if you talk about whiskey, the wood really imparts the majority of the flavor to the spirit. I mean, beyond the way that the spirit is created in a still, the oak is what's going to impart all of the quality and character that to that spirit. So it's interesting to me that they would do beer, because beer is a very flavorful spirit to begin with. You know, beer can be made in a variety of different ways, and you don't really need to age it in a cask. So it is curious to me that they sort of started that. And then reading their website, it was more of an accidental thing that they just, that's kind of what they're doing. And it just became a huge thing as people discovered it. So, you know, the first beer was that floral, citrusy, grapefruit, almost sour hop with a bright hop, but I would not describe it as sweet. And the Innocent Gun I would describe as very vanilla, the vanilla is actually almost running over the bitterness of the hops, believe it or not. So I think if you were not a fan of IPAs, or you wanted an IPA with training wheels, the Toasted Oak IPA might be a good way to go, because, you know, I almost think the oak is almost running over the hops in this IPA.
Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, Glenn, I saw you that you posted up. This is what the one I was going to have. I was interested to get a feel for how that oak would kind of mingle along with the hops.
Well, I mean, again, maybe it's just because so used to the number of IPAs in the industry that, like you, as you say, it's just, it's become Hopageddon, where it's just, it's a hop arms race. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, many, many years ago when everyone was trying to outdo each other in the peat in a whiskey, and they're like, well, you know, we've got, this is the most peaty and it's going to blow you away. And it seems like it's kind of become that way with hops, where it's like, oh, this is a quadruple hop, and we put fresh hop in, and then we like grind hops into the bottle. And, you know, if you like hops, and I do like hops, I'm cool with that. But, you know, from a flavor perspective, I don't know if it's necessary to blow somebody's face off with hop character.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if I were to use a word for this Innocent Gun, I think it would describe it as balanced. And I'm really glad I actually have this as my second beer, because it's such a counterpoint to the first one. Even though they are both IPAs, this is a very different IPA than the first one. And I think so far I prefer the pairing, and maybe just because, you know, I've kind of gotten about a half inch into my cigar, and it is becoming a little earthy. It's, you know, the spices and pepper are still there. Obviously the fire cured element is still there. And I think the fire cured actually goes really well with the vanilla character of the beer.
You know, the Dogfish Head, it's a very, very drinkable IPA. It does not have a lot of bitterness to it. I don't know what the IBU is on it, but it really is not kind of over the top for me, which is one of my gripes about it. But it's kind of almost got like a bit of a gritty drying finish, even though I still like kind of salivate after taking a sip. But when I switch over to the cigar, it seems to kind of tone down the flavors that I'm getting from the KFC, which actually is nice, because the KFC can be a bit overpowering with that fire cured flavor. So it's pretty actually an interesting combination with the two of these. I wouldn't have thought that it would work out that way, but I would say so far out of the two, this is the best pairing with Dogfish Head.
Now, and I know Rob's had Dogfish Head on the show in the past, and if I'm not mistaken, it's kind of one of those brews where they release a limited quantity, or at least they, you know, are limited in the amount they can produce, and they tend to sell pretty quick. Is, you know, we kind of talked a little bit offline, but I'm assuming you've not picked up Dogfish in the past, or is this kind of
I've had it here and there, just, you know, at friends' houses that they may have it, but it seems to be fairly easily accessible out here in California, so I haven't seen any kind of shortages in regards to the, you know, what quantities are available, but, you know, they have various different IPAs. So they have a 60 minute and some others. So, I think there's a good mix that makes it, you know, a little more widely available.
you darn Californians and your wide available beer at reasonable prices. I don't understand.
No, I mean, there's so much, like, when I go to the bottle shop, like, I went in there with a list of IPAs I was looking for, because this is the level that I'm not a fan of IPAs. I searched for what IPAs would someone that doesn't like IPAs want to drink. So I found an article that listed some of them. I went into the store and they had one. That was the Grapefruit Sculpin. So there's just so much out there, and you just have, it's going to be hit or miss as to what's available in your area.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, of course, Rob every week has this wide variety of beers that I would love to try. And he says, oh, you know, I just went into my local BevMo and they had 350 different beers for me to choose from. I'm like, thanks a lot, jerk. You know, like I have to wait like 6 months for that to make its way up and hope that my local cool places here bring it in.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if I was in California, I think I would probably just be going on a daily basis and picking up. I'd be Matt. I'd be like, you know, this is my 75th unique check-in for the week because.
Exactly.
For those of you listening, Matt is another one of our mods at Cigar Federation, and Matt is a consummate beer drinker. If fallen on Untappd, you'd be amazed at the number of unique beers that he gets his hands on. And we're probably gonna have to do a show, I think, with Matt in the near future, because it's a darn shame we have not had him on to do a beer pairing. But back to you for a second, because we talked a little bit offline. So obviously IPAs are not your normal thing. What would you say is like your normal, like what's your wheelhouse for beverages?
My favorite beer is beer style is Gosa. And then second to that, a close second would be sours. Those just kind of seem to hit my wheelhouse a little bit better. It's Gosa's are light, very light beers. I would say more of a summer type beer. Salty, coriander, various spices, things like that. So it's an easy drinking beer. And then sours can run the gamut. There can be, you know, fruit sours and various barrel-aged sours as well. So there's a lot of range to hit up in there. But the one of the side effects of sours is that they're starting to become very popular, and so the price is starting to really jump up in regards to what's out there. There's a wide range of companies that are putting those out as well.
Well, I don't know what you guys pair for Gosas or sours out in California in Freedom Land, Beer Freedom Land. But both that style is very, very expensive up here. I know we floated the idea of doing a Gosa show because I think Matt, of course, being the beer aficionado that he is, loves Gosas, loves sours. But, of course, you know, in fact, very much like the KFC pairing, it's like that's a very odd pairing. I mean, what do you pair with a sour and a Gosa?
Yeah, that's tough. Like I said, with the Gosas, it's fairly salty and some spice. So, but it's a light beer, so you're going to be looking for something that's not a super strong cigar either. And we're talking about before is I probably have to think about it a little bit to figure out. I don't think I'd say it. I pair anything in particular with it. But I'd have to kind of go back into the, you know, into my mind about cigars that I maybe even tried that might be a good fit, or find some newer cigars that have that kind of description of how they are supposed to taste to be able to find something that might work with it. But, I don't know, maybe a, you know, something that's a Connecticut or something like that. Actually, I just smoked the Drew State Connecticut Shade Dendrogram today. And that's why maybe a cigar that would pair well with the Gosa.
Yeah, because I mean that, and Willie was talking a little bit about that on the last show on Cigar Chat. I mean, he really blended that Connecticut to not be because Gorsi famously said on the show he hates Connecticut. He's not a Connecticut fan at all, and he really blended that to be much more full bodied. So yeah, maybe that's something that would stand because there is some peppery spiciness in the Underground Shade. Maybe that is something that would stand up. But I think I'm not funding that show if that's the case because it's not going to be cheap. I think the average Gosa, I was looking last weekend, the average Gosa up here per bottle runs over $9.
Okay. Yeah, around here that you can get pretty good Gosas in the, I'd say, for a 12-ounce bottle, $4 to $5. And they have some of the larger bottles that are like $8 a piece, something like that.
So have you done any pairings with sours in the past?
Not with that as the main goal. Drinking them and smoking various cigars at the same time. And, you know, some are a good fit, some are not a good fit. It just really depends because, with the sours, they can be fairly tart. And I think that flavor profile by itself, I don't think it goes along with cigars pretty much at all. So you just have to kind of go into it knowing that you're not really looking at it for the pairing. You're trying to take each separate thing as its own thing. So you're drinking the beer for the beer and you're smoking the cigar for the cigar. And what happens in the middle, who knows?
Fair enough. So, I mean, if you're not drinking beer, what is your warehouse for spirits? Because, of course, we've had quite a few different spirits on the show in the past. We've had rum. We've had cocktails. We've had whiskey. Where do you typically fall within the non-beerlandia?
So my go-to spirit is gin. And I typically don't drink it straight. It's typically going to be mixed something. So it's going to be maybe a martini. Or a variation of the Moscow Mule, so substituting the gin for vodka. But anything with gin and lime juice, that's typically going to be a good fit for me. So it's really good in the summertime. So it works out well. And you know, gin's kind of making a bit of a. I think it's probably one of the lowest rated spirits out there. It's probably not high on many people's lists, but it's starting to make its way into that kind of craft area where a lot of different people are making it. So, you know, different levels of juniper and things like that in the spirit. So, you know, there's a lot of different variations on it now.
So we were talking a little bit offline about that, the gin, but what's funny is that as far as spirits concerned, I pretty much love everything. And of course the irony is that the one thing I don't like is gin. And I think, you know, it's not a knock against the spirit. It's a flavor profile thing because, you know, when you talk about gin, one of the common characteristics you get is that very floral, I don't want to say hibiscus. It's botanicals and it's the very flavor. You know, if you're to look at a cigar flavor wheel, and you know, I smoke Cubans, and the Cuban cigars that I really hate the most have that floral characteristic to it, and that's just off-putting for me for whatever reason.
Right. Yeah, the juniper is the big deal. I mean, I think there's some kits out there where you can just take a vodka and take this mix of junipers and whatever other type of things they want in, and you make your own gin out of it. So that's kind of the homebrew version of making gin is just taking vodka and adding some things to it and letting it kind of, I don't know, marinate or whatever you want to call it to make it into that gin.
So we're way off topic now because we're talking about gin, but we've got a question from the audience, Bob Dog, who is a regular listener to the show. Bob Dog wants to know what your favorite gin is.
My favorite gin? I would say the one I like the most that's the most available is the Bombay Sapphire. It seems to stand up pretty well in most mixed drinks. If you're looking for something a little bit more expensive, you can go for Hendrix. So if you want to do something like with a cucumber thing in there for like a really, really refreshing like summer type drink, do Hendrix and a little bit of cucumber slices, things like that in there. That's a good solid drink.
Just a reminder to audience that you are listening to or watching Sharing Our Pairings, episode 40, Kentucky Fired Hops. Thanks very much for listening or watching wherever you are in the world. We know that we have audiences pretty much in every country in the world. And I mean, some really odd countries that I would not expect listeners. So wherever you guys are tuning in from, we appreciate that. Thanks again for our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. Hopefully you're getting entertained wherever you are in the world, staying safe. Make sure to check out the new Oktoberfest promotion we've got going on. The giving away boxes of limited edition Oktoberfest cigars. And for me personally, while that's cool, I'm also very jazzed about the beer steins they're giving away. That'll be running for the next few days until October the 4th. Look for daily giveaways at cigarfederation.com. It's on our main page. You can't miss it. We're talking about KFC and IPAs. I'm going to take a couple audience questions here because we've kind of been ignoring our audience. And Harley Holmes has the first question. He wants to know how far cured tobacco is made. And it's actually a really interesting process. And if you haven't been on a cigar safari, of course, we're running a cigar safari. We're going to be going down with Drew Estate and through Techo. We're going to be building some houses next February. Part of that cigar safari is they do take you through the barn and kind of show you a Kentucky Fire process. But essentially, the process is really just essentially burning a particular wood in the barn at a certain temperature and at a certain level of smokiness, and that smokiness imparts itself into the tobacco. Now, I'm really overly simplifying the process, but that's really all you're doing is you're imparting that smoke characteristic to the tobacco. And what's interesting is that, you know, there are, and Aaron, I think you were saying there's actually quite a few companies now that make far cured cigars.
Yeah. So Lucia makes the Lucia Black, which is using fire cured tobacco. And then also George Rico makes one called the American Puro, which uses the fire cured tobacco as well. And out of those, the American Puro is probably my favorite. And then I'd go with the Lucia Black and then the KFC. And then you mentioned the possibility of the Smoking Monk IP version having that possibly in there. So that would be a fourth. And those are really the ones that I know of that are out there that are easily accessible.
So I think, you know, I described the process quite simply, but in actuality, the process of fire curing is complicated. It is an old process. I mean, it goes back. I think JD was talking on the safari. It goes back at least 100 years. So it's something that's been around for some time. But, you know, fire cured flavors are not necessarily something that the average cigar smoker would appreciate. And you know, I kind of liken it to peat in whiskey, where it's a very predominant flavor, and it can be very off-putting for some people because, you know, it is such a dominant flavor. But it's a cool process, and if you have the chance to go down to check out the cigar safari, I highly recommend it. Harley has a follow-up question, and I think this is maybe more for you because I have not smoked many fire-cured cigars, believe it or not. Harley wants to know, can you recommend some fire-cured cigars for someone who hasn't smoked one? He's looking for something that is lightly fire-cured. Oh, okay. So, he's, you know, what's the range, lightly fire-cured up to a fuller fire-cured cigar?
Yeah, so I would kind of rate them back similar to my preference in them in that George Rico American Puro is the one that I would say is probably the least overpowering out of them. That's the cigar. It's all American tobacco. So, you know, some Pennsylvania broadleaf in there and the fire cured is in there. So, I'd say that's probably the best one to start out with. After you try that, you can determine if that's got enough for you or not enough. And if it's not enough, that's it. Go ahead and step up to the Lucia Black. That would be a good, second stage in regards to the fire cured. And then just kind of get a feel for those two. And then if you really want to step up to the big boys table, then you can fire up the KFC.
So in your opinion, the KFC would probably rank as one of the more full-bodied in terms of that the fire-cured flavor?
Yeah, I mean, with the KFC, that's the prominent flavor that you're going to get out of it. I mean, if you're looking for any nuances, you're not going to find them in the KFC, at least in my opinion. You can tell me what your thoughts are on it, but for the other two cigars, you're definitely going to be able to you'll taste that along with other flavors that are kind of in the mix.
And, you know, I think that makes sense to me in terms of you know, the Drew Estate approach to some of the cigars is that they're not looking for something that's I don't want to say nuanced, but something that's light. You know, when they blend something of a particular, and this is certainly true of the Underground Shade, they're not looking to just provide another fire-cured cigar in the market. They're looking to provide something that's different. So in a way, I think it makes sense that they would approach it from the perspective of let's really bring the fire-cured instead of just making it subtly fire-cured.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I don't know how your second pairing went, but I have to say that this Innocent Gun Toasted Oak is fantastic. This is actually the pairing I was hoping for. This is a killer pairing. I would totally, totally pair KFCs with the Toasted Oak IPA. It's that right balance of the fire-cured playing off against the vanilla from the oak in the Toasted Oak IPA, and then the hops in the IPA sort of offset the spiciness of the cigar. I mean, it's a medley of a few different flavors, but they play off each other really, really nicely, and it's going to be hard-pressed to beat this pairing tonight, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree. My second pairing with the Dogfish Head is best so far out of the two, just because neither one, the beer or the cigar doesn't overpower the other, so it's a good transition between the two. Dogfish Head has a really short finish, so there's not kind of any remnant to be able to really take over what you're going to get from the draw on the cigar. So it worked out well.
So getting into our last beer here, and I'm keeping it somewhat Canadian with my first beer and my last beer. This is and I love the name because it, you know, you could really take this in a variety of different ways. This is from Driftwood Brewery, located off Victoria, BC. For those who aren't maybe familiar with the geography of Canada, Victoria is just a small island off the coast of Vancouver. So it's an unusual place to have a brewery, but they've had a brewery there since 2008. It's in Rock Bay. And this is called the Fat Tug IPA. Now, I'm just going to let the audience take that as they were because we got to keep it clean on the Armed Forces Radio Network. But, you know, I really like the label. It's kind of got the ocean with a boat on it. And obviously the tug is meant to sort of, I think, be a little tongue in cheek. But they say, take a deep breath, sailor. It's difficult to fathom, but such monstrous hop bitterness can be foiled by ample malt buoyancy. This hop monster will pull you slow and low, deep down to hoppy nirvana. That's a heck of a statement. This is 7%. So I'm getting into your territory now. You know, it is a lot more ABVs, and they list the IBUs, which I appreciate. It's 80 IBUs. So I'm expecting this to be a big punch in the face hoppiness, deliciousness. So I'm gonna take some sips here and make some faces, and you can talk about your last beer.
Sure. So the last one I have is the Hermitage Brewing Company Citra. It's in their single hop series, and they're located in San Jose, California. So this is a local brewery to me and Rob. This one's at back down to 7%. And they do not list the IBUs, but I'm gonna say it's the highest of the three. So with this beer, this is the quintessential IPA that I don't like. This is the really bitter, very hoppy, super long finish type of IPA that just doesn't fit in my wheelhouse. And I've been taking a couple of sips on it already, and the finish is really long. And take a draw on the cigar, and once I'm done with the draw, the finish of the beer is still there. So.
Wow.
It's really high out there, and it's just a super long finish.
See, what's interesting is that I, you know, because IBUs typically is a measurement of hoppiness, like, you know, tells you how hoppy, but it's not necessarily going to tell you the flavor profile. So I was expecting, and certainly off the nose, I mean, like, this is just, I mean, it's like putting your nose into orange rind. It's just so citrusy and so bitter. And then I taste it, and it's, I think you might actually really enjoy this because it's this really cool interplay between a bitter, orangey, citrusy hop and this really bright, sweet grapefruit, almost a stone fruit IPA hop. And it's got a very, very short finish because the grapefruit sweetness, you know, you kind of get that initial hit of hoppiness that's very bitter, and you're like, eh, that's a lot of hop. And then immediately that grapefruit hop kicks in, and it just, it like cuts it right off of the knees, and it finishes very sweet.
it's very different than the grapefruit sculpin, where you get the grapefruit up front and then you get the hoppy bitterness at the end. So I'd be very curious to try that and see how the kind of the flip flop and the flavors work out.
I mean, I think, and certainly, you know, I'd like to say that I did this intentionally, where I went through and charted out all three of these beers to make sure that I had three very different IPAs. But that would make me seem much smarter than I am. Really, what I did is I picked three IPAs that I enjoy, and I said, "Let's try these." Just, you know, a little peek behind the curtain there. But the way it turned out is that, you know, the Village Maiden is very much a session IPA, where it is an IPA, but it's not a crazy, crazy hoppy IPA. The Innocent Gun is more of a sweet, approachable IPA, which is probably, you know, I'd classify as an everyman IPA. And then this Fat Tug IPA is almost, I would say it's like they call it a beer geek IPA. And my girlfriend's just making faces at the stink of the cigar. So you know that the KFC has got some pungency when it can make somebody frown their noses half a block away.
But I didn't think you were, you know, cooking dinner. Like,
No. She knew what that smell was. But they, I mean, this is a very hop aficionado without going into that territory of double, triple, quadruple, imperial hoppy character. I think this, I'm surprised because, you know, when I see 80 IBUs, I'm expecting a hop ride. And, instead what I get is a really, really balanced IPA. And I love balanced IPAs. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. That'd be a very interesting one to try that out then.
And I think I'm getting three very different smoking experiences here, because I think the citrus of the IPA is making more of a impact in this last pairing than in certainly the first two. And I think it's a shame because, like I said, I really like that Village Maiden, but I think in terms of pairing, it just gets lost because they try to make it a very approachable IPA. I think it's getting lost against the cigar. The Innocent Gun works really well, especially if you're, you know, not a fan of strong, bitter IPAs. I think that's a no-brainer. And like I said, the vanilla pairs brilliantly with the cigar. But I'm going to enjoy exploring this Fat Tug IPA and the cigar for the next little while because, the interplay is very different.
Yeah, with the three I have, The Citra from Hermitage, it's not a good pairing. It overpowered cigar. I mean, and to overpower a KFC, that's saying something. So, but I mean, the people that are hopheads and they love that, you know, that bitterness and that long finish, that may be something that they enjoy. It's just not for me. But with the Grapefruit Sculpin and the Dogfish Head, those are both pretty good. The beers on their own, I don't find them offensive to me. You get the grapefruit on the Sculpin. It's a good pairing with the cigar as well. And then the Dogfish Head. I don't know if it's a great pairing, but they're completely, neither one of them interferes with the other. So the beer doesn't run over the cigar doesn't run over the beer. So you could have those two together and you're not, you know, it's not going to affect the flavors of either one. So I guess maybe that is a good pairing. I mean, it's not going to complement each other, but they don't take away from each other. So you could drink it and enjoy each of them for what they are.
So is it safe to say then that the Ballast Point may be a revisit for you?
Yeah, definitely. That's the first time I've tried it. And I haven't tried the regular Sculpin. So I might try that just to see, but I have a feeling that it might just be too bitter without the kind of the grapefruit cutting through it. But they also make a habanero Sculpin. So I might want to give that one a try as well. Just to kind of feel of how the pepper, you know, kind of works in there with the bitterness. It's not as easily available as the other two. I know Rob said he's come across it before, so I just have to run over to his house and grab a bottle or something like that.
I'm pretty sure his beer cellar is probably pretty full.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting him when he asked me to come on the show that he was going to give me a bottle of Pliny the Elder to have on there, but he wasn't that nice, so.
No. He's nice, but not that nice.
Right.
Now, I think if there's some possibility if you're to weasel your way onto a cigar safari with Rob, there's some possibility. I think he could be talked into bringing a Pliny the Elder to Nicaragua. I'm not sure how that would be in the hot environment of Nicaragua, but
it'd be worth to find out, I think.
So I think for me, I mean, obviously I am an IPA guy and I love different IPAs and trying out, you know, various levels of hoppiness. Like I said, the Village Maiden, that's kind of a no-brainer cigar from our no-brainer IPA from my beer fridge. It's always in my beer fridge, and I, you know, typically pick up a Village sampler pack. So that's kind of I don't want to say daily beer because that makes me sound like an alcoholic, but that's a regular beer for me. That's a regular IPA. The Innocent Gun Toasted Oak IPA is a little bit more money, so it's kind of, I would say, more of a, you know, unique tasting for me where I try to have it on special occasions, but I'm really torn between this Innocent Gun and the Fat Tug. And I think, you know, in terms of characteristics of kind of what makes an IPA, I feel like this Fat Tug wins just because, you know, it's kind of a really hardcore IPA without blowing you out again with that bitterness. And it doesn't have that long finish. So, at the risk of saying it's a tie, I'm going to go with the Fat Tug as my number one. And I think I will probably go back to my local store here, Kensington Wine Market, and probably pick up some more Fat Tug, maybe lay some down for a month and see how it progresses. And but I think for me, that might be the clear winner in this pairing.
Yeah, I think for me, the Dogfish Head is the winner. And a majority of that is due to the short finish on it. Just because the bitterness that kind of hangs out is why I don't care for the IPAs. So the Grapefruit Sculpin's good, but it does have a medium finish. So you kind of still get that hanging around, but it's a good beer on its own. But I definitely lean towards the Dogfish Head. The Hermitage Brewing Citra, that's a no-go for me.
Well, I mean, in terms of the Dogfish, I think that makes sense to me because, and unfortunately, I have not had the opportunity to try a lot of Dogfish because it is so hard to get up here. But I mean, the what I've heard from people whose palates I trust is that the Dogfish is a very, very good IPA. So in a way, it doesn't surprise me that it would pair well because, you know, they do go to such great lengths to craft an excellent IPA. And if it is a sort of a very balanced IPA, then it should pair well with something. You know, again, we're kind of going against the grain tonight, pairing a KFC. And, you know, we did get a lot of comments on Twitter and we got some comments on Facebook. You know, and I actually appreciate that because part of the reason we started the show last year was to try stuff that moves people out of their comfort zone. And, you know, we don't want to just say, you know, look, we paired another Maduro cigar with a bourbon. It's like, yeah, well, of course bourbon goes with a Maduro cigar. Like, duh. We wanted to try and move outside of that comfort zone and try different things. So, you know, I wasn't sure how tonight would go, but I would say pretty well. Like, I'm glad that we had the opportunity to do a follow-up show with a KFC and an IPA.
Yeah, definitely. I think the having the KFC, which has got a definitely distinct and strong flavor profile, does work along with the IPAs, just because I think some other cigars wouldn't be able to stand up to it with bitterness in the finish on some of these. So I definitely think it was a good experiment to go through.
I like smoking cigars and drinking spirits and beers. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So thanks very much, Aaron, on relatively short notice for stepping in as a guest co-host. Hopefully we can have you on some future shows and maybe have you on Cocktails 2.0, 3.0, try some different things. Try to move outside of the IPA zone.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Thank you for having me on.
For sure. So thanks very much for Armed Forces Radio Network listeners. As we say, stay safe. You guys are built to do things that we are not, and we appreciate wherever you are in the world listening. Thanks very much for our podcast listeners. Make sure to tune in tomorrow night. This is going to be an interesting show on Cigar Chat. I think Logan is going to be talking about the Royal Agio trip. It's going to be a recap show, so that'll be one to tune in for. So check that out tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks very much. Make sure to drink better, but drink less. And we're back. So, yeah, the IPAs, it's tough, man. It's like, to me, IPAs and the beer are like peat of scotches. Like, you can get somebody who's a scotch drinker, and then you bring up a peaty scotch, and they go, oh, I fucking hate peat. Just yeah. Hate it. And I think the same is true of beer. I mean, my girlfriend is a like a true hardcore beer geek. But she's the same way. She just cannot stand a really bitter IPA. And I think, you have to be a particular type of beer nerd to like.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you bring up the scotch piece because, I actually enjoy the peat scotches better than the ones that don't have as much peat to them, which is I think a bit of an odd change there. So, something like Bulin or something like that is kind of more in my wheelhouse than, maybe something that has a less peat characteristic to it.
That definitely makes you a bit of an oddity, no question.
Yeah.
I'd just like to throw a shout out to CCE, which is a Facebook group. They've been tuning into cigar sharing our pairings lately. That is Canadian Cigar Enthusiasts. They're a bunch of Canadian cigar nerds, and they like to post all kinds of pairings, and hopefully they're tuning in tonight. One of the things we like to do on our After Dark segment is NFL. And we talked a little bit before the show about NFL, and you mentioned you're a football fan, but we really didn't get into any details. So first of all, and the most important question is, who is your team?
My team is the Cowboys.
Go Cowboys. All right. Yeah. I can get behind that. Because there's a lot of Cowboy hate out there.
Oh, yeah. It's, you have to hate on the teams that do well sometimes. So I know we haven't done well in a while, but – they have a long history with a lot of winning, so got to deal with it.
Well, let me ask you this. So, of course, Romo goes down with a clavicle injury. You always hate, regardless of how your feelings are on the team, you always hate to see a player go down with an injury, especially a quarterback, because, quarterbacks are really the linchpin of a team. But part of me was not surprised by that because Romo – he's kind of getting this history of like, he starts out doing really well and then all of a sudden gets injured and he gets knocked out for 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, that must have been devastating.
Well, I'm in the camp that we're never going to win anything with Romo as our quarterback. But the fact is once you lose him, though, you're dealing with a backup and the backup's never going to be as good as a bad Romo or anything like that. So, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see what happens with the, some of the backups and see what goes on there. But Romo will be back in whatever they've deemed it, 6-8 weeks, something like that. And then we'll have to see what he does after the fact. It's probably going to be, the team does well, gets enough to get in the playoffs, and then Romo breaks our heart again by doing something stupid. But, that's probably how it's going to work out for us.
It's tough. I mean, I've kind of been of the opinion that I think the first problem the Cowboys need to resolve is that Jerry Jones needs to be an owner and not a GM.
Yep, hire a GM.
Hire a GM, a quality GM.
And guy who's,
yeah, absolutely. No question. Because once you can detach Jerry from GM responsibility, no offense, but Jerry Jones is not a good GM.
Right. So
if you can bring in a good GM – move Jerry back to player ownership, I think you can sort of right the team and sort of start to pull them back to maybe the late 80s Cowboys.
Yeah, and the NFL has this weird thing where they were, for a while it was head coaches. They wanted to have a ton of, player personnel decisions and things like that, the whole Bill Parcells thing, Holmgren type of thing. So, I think they need to take a little bit of more of a play from baseball where you have the manager manages the guys on the field. The GM handles all the player personnel and puts the team together based on what their kind of strategy is and just let it happen that way. I mean, I don't know if the culture in football is all that different or not, or, you know, whatever, but I think, at least for the Cowboys, you definitely have to separate the owner from the GM, because I think there's a little bit too much of personal taste and things like that. You know, maybe he likes a player or whatever, and he wants that guy, and it just doesn't work out, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're going to have decisions made on different guidelines. Like, you're going to have an owner making decisions based on money, based on other factors. A GM and certainly a head coach is looking to make decisions based on, I want to fucking win games. Like, that's – if I don't win games, I'm going to lose my job. So there's really nobody more invested in the success of the team from a win perspective than a head coach and certainly a GM, because, you know, they know that both of them are going to have their jobs on the line if they don't.
Right.
So – just a recap, because Rob unfortunately was not around for week two, and that's probably for the best for me. But it's just a recap for those who have been tuning in for many weeks of sharing our pairings. So in week one, I managed to edge out Rob by a game. We were on with Terrence Riley from Quesada. Terrence actually did really, really well with his picks. He had to drop early, but the only picks he got wrong were the Browns over the Jets, and that really is just because, you know, he's a dirty Patriots fan. And the Lions over the Chargers, which I also picked. But I edged Rob in the first week, 11-16. Rob was 10-16. Week two, I just crapped the bed. I was 9-16, so pretty ugly. But I feel like I redeemed myself last week. I went 12-16. I edged Rob by another game, so I'm two games up on Rob. And Bob Dog, who emailed us his picks. Bob Dog did really well. He got 12 for 16. And the only surprise games, I think, Bob Dog went with the Saints over the Panthers, which, you know, come on. That, to me, like, of all the games of the week, to me, the Panthers seemed like the lock. And then, sadly, he fell for the Jets trap, as I did, being a Jets homer. You know, the Jets defensively were absolutely crucifying the Eagles, but just, like, did everything. Like, and this is going to sound terrible, but not to take anything away from the Eagles, but the Eagles didn't win that game. The Jets lost that game. They did everything within their power to give the Eagles that game. And in the end, they did. I mean, they literally, it was just a comic of just football follies over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So we'll go through the picks, and we've got some interesting matchups this week. There's some classic matchups, starting with the Ravens and Steelers. Of course, Roethlisberger out. I think he's out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, they're definitely saying, I think it's more on the 6 week side than the 4 week side. I think that's very, very optimistic at the early onset of that injury.
That's bad. I mean, the Steelers, they have a pretty good team, but I mean, you know, you take away Roethlisberger, and Roethlisberger is really the key to how they win games. You take him away, you throw in a divisional matchup, and the Ravens and Steelers, I mean, that's, you talk about classic divisional hatred. The Ravens and the Steelers play each other very aggressively. I'll let you go first, because you're the guest host. How are your, what are your thoughts on that game? Where are you going with that?
For me, I'm probably gonna lean towards the Ravens. I know they haven't won anything yet this year, but I think
1-3.
Yeah, with this is the trick: is how's Vic gonna do, right? So I think that's gonna be kind of the wild card here. But I will say, with it being a short week for them, Vic to prepare to start, you know, let's go with the Ravens for that.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. You know, that I think the Steelers are always going to be competitive, especially when you talk about a divisional game. But you take away Roethlisberger, and I don't see how they're going to win that game. Next up, an odd game as the league continues to try and push this agenda of London. I don't get it. I have very strong feelings about, you know, first of all, the safety of teams flying across the pond. But, you know, you talk about jet lag and short weeks. And then you throw in the fact that this is a divisional game, and I have, you know, a lot of bitterness about hosting a divisional game in another country. I don't think the league should do this. If you want to have conference matchups or interconference matchups, that's fine. But don't host a divisional matchup in another country. I think that's just a huge mistake. It is my New York Football Jets against the dirty, filthy Miami Dolphins in London.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Dolphins have looked pretty silly this year. So I would probably lean towards the Jets winning this. I just don't know, you know, how this whole London thing is going to play into it. I know some teams don't travel well. So I would probably give the Jets the favor in regards to being able to play in London. So I'll go with the Jets.
I am also going with the Jets. And again, not just because I'm a Jets homer. The Jets offensively are not looking good. They don't have one of their key weapons, Eric Decker. They just look terrible. Brandon Marshall with a shovel pass last week, which just, you know, he said it was the stupidest football move in NFL history. I don't know if it was the stupidest move, but from a veteran receiver, I can't imagine what was going through his brain. I got the Jets down, but I don't know if this is a game that London's going to want to watch.
Yeah.
Jaguars go to Indianapolis to face the Colts. I know there's I've already put Rob down, even though he doesn't have his picks in. He's got the Colts as his perennial football favorites for the Super Bowl. So I've put him down as his one pick for this week as the Colts. I think there's a lot of talk about whether the Colts are going to do well because they came out of the gate, got beat up by the Bills, got beat up by the Jets. And I think that's as much people's feelings about the Bills and the Jets as it is about the Colts. Sadly, the Jags are a mess. They're continuing to be a mess. To me, the Colts are kind of a no-brainer in this game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, Luck's not this bad. I mean, he's already shown it over his previous seasons that he's a pretty solid guy. So I just think it's going to take a little bit of time for him to figure that out. And I would say that this is probably the week that he gets back on track. And like you said, the Jags are, I don't know, Jags are a disaster. So I don't think it should be that tough for Indianapolis to win this game.
Next up, now that the Jets have vacated, the Giants are going to Buffalo to face off against the Bills. And this could make for a really interesting game because, you know, the Bills losing against the Patriots, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, the Bills are going to beat the Patriots. That's a tough matchup. Beating the Patriots, especially in your division, it's a very tough game. I think the Bills have played much better football than I gave them credit for. What are your thoughts on this game?
I think the Bills' defense is pretty solid. So, I think they'll be able to continue that and handle the Giants. I wouldn't say fairly easily, but I think they'll definitely be able to pull that out and beat them this week.
I agree. I think, you know, the first couple weeks now, the Giants have not looked good. You know, people might look at the Cowboys-Giants game and say, you know, well, the Giants did really well, and then they lost the game because of a number of factors. The thing is that you can't really judge a team's performance in a divisional matchup because teams always play tough against each other divisionally. Even if the team sucks, and you know we saw that out of the Rams, even if the team sucks, they play very good football divisionally. But I think the Bills have been playing good football, and you know they just got beat by a better team. They're just not ready to take on the Patriots. So, you know, my feeling is with the Giants not playing well, with the Bills seemingly firing on all cylinders, I think the Bills are going to take this one.
Yep.
I'm just going to put your pick down there, so I've got it. And then we're going to go on to the Mediocrity Bowl number one, which is the Panthers versus the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably just lean a little bit towards the Panthers. I don't know, to say better, maybe the better quarterback out of the two teams. I don't know. Yeah, it's a bit more of a coin flip to me, but I'll lean towards the Panthers, even though the Bucks are home.
Yeah, you know, I think the home field advantage does play a factor, and I kind of went back and forth because I feel like this might be one of those classic trap games where the Bucks have not been playing good football. The Panthers have been playing pretty good football, you know, and Cam and all that. I think I'm going to have to go with the Panthers, but I feel like this could be one of those games where it comes down to a 2-minute drive and, you know, it could go either way.
Yep.
Another classic divisional matchup, which I'm sure you're happy for both teams to lose. The Eagles travel to Washington to face off against the Redskins.
Yeah, the Eagles under Chip Kelly haven't been all that spectacular this year, but I don't know. I mean, DeMarco Murray seems like he just, I don't know, forgot how to play or something. So I'm not sure if he's going to play or even figure out what to do this week or whatever. But, I mean, they have to be better than they have been. And the Redskins, I just think, are horrible. So I guess I'll give a slight edge to the Eagles in this one.
I am also going with the Eagles. And this is one of those games where I kind of went back and forth and back and forth. I think the Redskins are a mess. The Eagles are a mess. And the Eagles are just less of a mess. One of the games that I'm not looking forward to, the Oakland Raiders versus the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I will use your terminology from the previous pick in regards to which team is less of a mess than the other one. Bears are a complete disaster. The Raiders are a disaster, but you know, maybe just not as much as the Bears. I would typically love to pick up against the Raiders just because I think that they suck and that they shouldn't have any fans anymore based on how the organization has performed over the last decade or so. But unfortunately, I think the Raiders will still win this game.
And I'm not even sure that Cutler is starting for the Bears. I think he's listed as probable, and I'm reasonably confident he's not going to start that game. So I'm also going Raiders. Raider Nation. The Hard Knocks Texans versus the Atlanta Falcons, who are undefeated, and I made the mistake of picking against them. They're undefeated, and they're playing in Atlanta.
Yeah, I would go with the Falcons in this. I mean, Julio Jones is just playing out of his mind. Like, I don't know what's going on with that guy. Like, he was fantastic a couple previous seasons ago, and then he kind of fell off the last couple years due to injury. But he's picked it back up, and, you know, playing in the dome, got to help give the advantage to the Falcons. So I think they'll still win this game.
Yeah, I agree. Julio's playing like the guy is looking for a contract extension. Like, it's just unbelievable. I don't know what's motivating him, but I feel like the Texans are just going to get beat up in this game. It's going to be very lopsided. The Kansas City Chiefs, who, you know, I was kind of a believer, and I picked the Chiefs a few times, and they keep letting me down against the Cincinnati Bengals. And I, you know, I've said this in previous pick lists that I keep underestimating them, and the Bengals 3-0, and they've looked complete. So, what are your thoughts on that game playing in Cincinnati?
I mean, I think it really hinges on Andy Dalton. He's, you know, he's shown glimpses of very goodness in the past, and he's kind of starting to put it all together this season. I just don't know if he's a guy that you can completely count on to stay consistent the entire way through. And I would just think the Chiefs should be a little bit better. So this might be one of the games where I actually try to pick a bit of an upset. I probably could lean towards the Chiefs in this one.
Going for the Chiefs. All right. So we've got a pick discrepancy here because I'm going with the Bengals. I feel like this is the week where, you know, I would normally pick the Chiefs. I'm going to pick the Bengals. They're at home. I feel like if I pick the Chiefs, it's just going to be a mistake. So I'm going to put you down for the Chiefs, and I'm putting myself down for the Bengals.
All right.
Next up, a game that I don't know even diehard fans are going to want to watch. Cleveland Browns versus the San Diego River Chargers.
I'm going to lean towards the Chargers on this one, partly because the Browns are so bad. And the Chargers are playing at home. I don't know. Phillip Rivers is a yo-yo. He's up and down all over the place. So hopefully he's up on this one. But I'll go with the Chargers.
Yeah, I'm. I mean, I don't. This is like a coin flip game for me because I feel like the Chargers have been playing so terribly, and the Browns have been losing games that they seemingly would have won. But the Chargers is at home, and they really can't lose this game. I'm also going with the Chargers on this one. Next up, the Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers, facing the 49ers. And yeah. I know Rob would pick the 49ers just because he loves punishment.
Yep.
But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the Packers in this one. The Niners, I think going into the season, 49ers fans even knew that this was going to be a horrible year for them. And Colin Kaepernick is not the real deal. They based all of his future planning on the first six games he ever played, and after that he's been a disaster. So I just foresee the Packers kind of destroying the Niners at home.
Yeah, it's. I think this is going to be an ugly game. There's going to be stabbings, and there's going to be bad news after this game because – yeah, people are not going to take this well. In what might be the most lopsided game of the week, the Rams are facing off against the Arizona Cardinals.
Cardinals defense is nuts. I mean, they had a really big week last week. I just don't think the Rams really have anything to kind of go up against them. So I think it's going to be an easy win for the Cards.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a question is whether the Falcons game is going to be more of a blowout than the Cardinals game. But I don't see the Cardinals losing this game unless there's some freak injury. I just can't see it.
Yeah.
The Vikings travel to Mile High, and I've been underestimating the Vikings. They've been winning games that I didn't think they're going to win. But, you know, Mile High, man. You know, and you got a quarterback that's probably one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'll lean towards the Broncos on this one. I don't know that it's going to be any kind of a blowout or anything, but I think the home field definitely helps the Broncos, and I think they'll be able to pull this one out.
The Cowboys go to New Orleans to face off against the Saints, which is, you know, I think there's a lot of bad blood, if I remember right, between the Cowboys and the Saints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think I'm going to pick the Cowboys, and it's not just because I'm a Cowboys fan. I have no problem picking against them if it's going to be, you know, a definite loss or something like that. But I just think that both teams are kind of in a weird state right now. You know, the Saints are trying to have to figure out things without Jimmy Graham and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of a challenge for them. So I'm going to go for the Cowboys.
I am also going for the Cowboys. I think this game is going to be a grind. This is going to be one of those games that ends with some, like, really weird score, like, you know, like a safety decides it or something. I think it's going to be total points for this game is going to be under 20 points. Like, it's just going to be just a grinder, but I'm going to have to go with the Cowboys for a lot of the same reasoning as you. I think the Saints are just a mess. And even without Romo, I think the Cowboys have enough tools to make this one happen.
Yeah.
And in the Mediocrity Bowl number two for the week, the Detroit Lions, who, you know, I gave them a lot of credit because they've got all these tools. And it's like giving all these power tools to a six-year-old, and they're like stabbing themselves in the hand. I just don't know what's going on. And then they face off against the Seahawks in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, Stafford, I don't know what he's doing. So I don't think anything – I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to happen with him. But the Seahawks, yeah, I think it was a bit surprising that they kind of started out the way they did with the first two losses. I think with them being at home, definite advantage for them. I think they'll start to pick it up a little bit more. And I think it might be a bit of a lopsided win, actually, and the Seahawks will definitely pull this one out.
Okay, so you're calling the Seahawks as a you know, reasonable win on this one?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that only leaves us the – gosh, what did we split on any games?
Yeah, we split on the – I think the Chiefs-Bengals game, right?
Chiefs-Bengals. Yep. So that's the only game we've split on. And of course, the Patriots are on a bye week because this is my big fantasy football matchup week where I face one of the top scoring people in my conference. So, of course, that is the week that the Patriots are on the bye, and I'm going to get just absolutely beat up.
So I'm assuming you had Brady. Is that what it was?
No. Yeah, so this is only my third year doing a fantasy league. But I think one of the traps, because we're doing a PPR league, and I think one of the traps for me is picking a quarterback early on. And yes, a quarterback is important, and yes, a quarterback is probably good for, you know, if you get a good quarterback, 20-plus points a game. But to me, the philosophy has always been focus on receivers and running backs because at the end of the day, you know, all of your production is going to come from top-quality running backs and quarterbacks – or running backs and receivers. So I've actually got Tyrod for the Bills starting this week. Previous to that, I had what's-his-nuts from the 49ers as my main quarterback, which, you know, he's still good for 15 points. So the problem, of course, is that I've got the feature running back for the Patriots and the receiver, and both of them are on bye. So I don't know what I'm going to do this week. How's your fantasy football going?
I play in two leagues. One league I'm 2-1. The other one I'm 1-2. So the one I'm 1-2 in, it was it's a deep league, 14 teams. I had a last pick in the draft, so it was a little kind of a rough draft for me. But I do have Brady in one of those, so we have a bye this week. But I also have Russell Wilson in that league, so it's not too bad of a fix for the bye week.
Well, I'm in my conference. Because we're in a 16 team league, which I've never been in a 16 team league. Like I think the most I've ever been in is like a 10 team league. So there's just no players available. Up until this week, I've been 3-0. I've been winning my games, you know, reasonably decisively. But I think this is going to be the week where I take a dive. What's your score standing, or how are you doing in your two leagues?
One's 2-1, one's 1-2. So the last week in the 2-1 league, I scored the most points out of any team so far this season. And that included having Steve Smith on the bench. So he went off like crazy last week. So that team, the team 2-1 is pretty well set. The other one's going to be a struggle this season. I mean, I got to have a guy that comes up from nowhere or pull somebody off of waivers that kind of picks it up during the season for me to have a chance, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. So we'll check in next week on Sharing Our Pairings 41. I can't recall what we've got, but, you know, check out our event page, check out our Sharing Our Pairing page. Aaron, thanks again for being a special guest host. We'll have to have you on for maybe some more interesting beers and pairings in the future.
Absolutely.
As we always say on the show, make sure to drink better, but drink less.